Howdy there, and welcome back to the Bird Gang Blitz. I'm your co-host, Blake Murphy. Along with me, as always, is Johnny Venerable, breaking down the Cardinals, Niners, looking at the offensive line and the future. Let's go ahead and start with just a quick game breakdown. So what was your biggest takeaway from the game, John, which is just a terrible, awful 15 game up until the very, or 15 to 12 game up until the very end? What do you have to say about
the
toughness Carson Palmer showed?
Yeah, I mean, it was one of those games going in similar to the Dallas game where you thought that the Cardinals would have opportunities to score offensively if they would hold up on the offensive line. Of course, they didn't. Unlike Dallas, San Francisco has one of the better defensive lines in all football. They've got three first-round offensive or defensive line prospects that have turned into very good defensive linemen in the NFL, Solomon Thomas, DeForest Buckner, and Armstead on their defensive line. And they gave the Cardinals all kinds of problems. And the Cardinals were dealing with injuries up front. Carson Palmer was sacked, I believe, 6 or 7 times in that game and was hit probably in the double digits. So he did a nice job evading probably, I would say, 10 sacks all in all. And so his toughness, again, was something that you can't measure. And I think that all in all, he played probably as well as you could ask. The receivers played a solid game. The running game was not there. I think I saw some advanced metrics from this game that said that the Cardinals had the least productive running game in terms of blocking and a combination of running backs and breaking tackles. A combination of those two, least efficient in all football. So Carson and Larry and some of the other wide receivers are essentially doing it by themselves. And, it's an interesting stat. Carson is on pace to take a league-leading, I believe it's 64 or 68 sacks, which would obviously be a franchise record. But he's also on pace to throw a franchise record 5,100 yards passing. And so it's interesting, which one is he more likely to hit, Blake? I ask you, that mark is in the passing game, or is he more likely to be sacked 60-plus times?
Well, it's hard to say with the Cardinals' offensive line because you've seen areas at least of improvement over the last San Francisco game, which is a sign of positive. You saw Jared Valdir held up his end, but you've also seen the fact that DJ Humphreys got injured again. He's going to be out maybe another 1 or 2 weeks. You've got reports coming out of camp that Alex Boone has been practicing, which is kind of surprising considering that most people thought he would miss anywhere from 2 to maybe even 4 weeks. So whether the team's rushing him along or whether he's actually maybe going to be able to play on Sunday, that could be a sign of improvement for the Cardinals line. At some point, you have to figure that they'd have to adjust their offensive line to the point where Carson Palmer wouldn't be able to take that many amount of hits. They've been trying to adjust it. They've been doing things, but they've still given up 12 sacks in the last two games. If they don't manage to make that adjustment, I just can't see him being able to last after being hit 64 times. He's already missed time with a concussion. He's had two torn ACLs as well in his career. So you're just talking about a performance where he's really going out and showing that he is one of those quarterbacks who can really deliver when the pressure is on. But I just don't see him being a guy who's going to be able to take all those different hits and be able to perform. So if I had to say for which one it would be, I would say it's more likely he hits neither of those for right now, because unless they can see dramatic improvement from the offensive line, you just don't see anything that he's going to be able to last long enough. Speaking of the offensive line, we've had plenty of struggles with, even though John Wetzel did surprisingly not terrible for his first time coming in as a guard, but we still saw some issues as far as for the rest of the protection. What did you see at least on Sunday from the Cardinals offensive line?
Well, I think the biggest thing that stood out was Jared Valdir bounced back in terms of he wasn't the worst offensive lineman in the league like he was against DeMarcus Lawrence and the Dallas Cowboys like he 2 weeks ago. He manned up, played well last week like we know he could, played well at right tackle. Again, the Cardinals can't get any kind of a push in the run game. And when they choose to run, they run left. They don't run right. So that shows you how inequipped they are to run the football in general. They'd rather run toward the left side of their offensive line, which contains rookies and undrafted free agents, compared to Evan Bame, who a lot of us thought was going to be a quality pro. And let's keep in mind, he was drafted in front of Dak Prescott. Right now, he is grossly underperforming. And then Jared Valdir, who, again, held up fine in pass protection, but right now has no power, went from one of the more most powerful offensive linemen in the league to now containing no power in his game. So what I saw from this this unit is you have zero building blocks on this offensive line. The center, Shipley, looks like somebody that you could go year to year with, depending on what kind of quarterback you have, depending on, you know, free agent centers and centers available in the draft. Nobody is above replacing in this unit, and nobody stood out to me on this offensive line on Sunday. And I think that we are seeing now just how special David Johnson was a year ago, specifically in games like the Seattle game late in the season last year. I believe that was week 16 when he went up to Seattle and put up, you know, something like 140 yards all purpose and three or four touchdowns with an offensive line that was similar to this one. And Carson had, you know, an outstanding game as well. You see special performances like that with similarly constructed offensive lines. And you say, wow, are these players special to cover up the warts of these offensive lines? And then you take away a player like David Johnson and you substitute players as limited in the run game like Chris Johnson on the latter half of 30 years old. And you see how limited you become as an offense, you know, in this league, that now when you're inept on offense, even though you may have a great defense, you're going to be in a struggle week to week to win football games. And so they have no push, you know, they have an immobile quarterback, and you've got your left tackle who week to week, now it's being reported that he's got a small tear in his knee that had happened a week ago, the same practice that Humphreys got hurt. I think it was the same practice, Blake, correct me if I'm wrong, that Iupati went down and he had to be put on IR.
So, and Robert Condici as well. One practice for all three of those guys.
Yep. So just a nightmare scenario for this unit that before the year started, we all thought, hey, this unit might be fine if Valdir plays up to his capabilities. If Humphrey takes the next step, Iupati comes back, maybe in better shape. Bame takes the next step. This unit could be, you know, maybe sneaky top 10. Nope. It turns out this is probably one of the worst offensive lines in the league, rivaling the likes of the Seattle's. But the difference is the Seahawks have a mobile quarterback. And they're able to mask this unit. The Seahawks have a far superior defense, and they have, you know, a far superior home field advantage. And they've weathered this kind of storm before. The Cardinals have not. They're not used to weathering this kind of storm. When the offensive line is not humming to the point where, you know what, they're giving up this kind of, you know, this kind of pressure, we've seen what it's done to their teams. I was at the Rams game in 2012 when the offensive line gave up 8 sacks in St. Louis to Kevin Cobb, and that derailed the season when the team, I believe, was 4-0 at that time, and the team fell. I think they lost something to the effect of, you know, 11 of their next 12 games. It can derail your season. So I'm happy that they got the win, but at the same time, who have they really played that's outstanding defensively? Dallas is below average. San Francisco is below average. Indianapolis is below average. And, you know, the Lions have, I think, one of the top fantasy defenses, but nobody considers them a top defense. If anything, I think they've played over their heads, specifically in their back seven. They've made a lot of plays in terms of their corners have had, you know, the Slays of the world have had some nice moments, some pick sixes, the Glover Quins, but nothing in terms of, you know, you can't run on so-and-so Gerard Davis of the world. So we haven't played the Seattles of the world. We haven't played Aaron Donald yet. So again, it may only get worse from here. I hate to say it, Blake.
Yeah, that's part of when we're going to look at least at the end, talking just about the upcoming Eagles defense is going to be that just seems like a tough match, even if you have Alex Boone in there. One thing I want to at least touch a little bit on is we talked about injuries and how that's just decimated our offensive line. But one thing at least to look at is the Cardinals did get a player back in the game who was able to make an impact, and they also did lose a player. The player and the guy that they seem to have gotten back at least for the current time is John Brown. And John Brown ended up being a guy who he didn't have the top stats in the game. Jerron Brown was the guy who actually ended up with over 100 yards, but you got to see him be healthy, and he got to get a couple pass interference calls and what should have been potentially the game-winning touchdown. It was, of course, you know, not ruled one, at least on the replay and the refs in New York, but that's another matter. But the biggest thing is the Cardinals offense, when they have John Brown, just looks so dramatically different, because he's a guy who not just takes the top off the defense, but gets open and forces defenders to have to be handsy on him to prevent these big plays from happening. So you're able to kind of see a glimpse of some of what the Cardinals offense could be potentially with John Brown in there, but you also just keep seeing the same red zone woes. And you also have to now look at the team going into next week, missing one of their top defenders in Marcus Golden. And that's been something that's been difficult for me to pin down exactly what the impact on Golden's going to have in this team, because he's been a bit inconsistent this year. He's had times where he hasn't played contain. He hasn't been able to put up the sack numbers. Lisa, what do you think that Golden's biggest impact on this team is, and who are the guys that are going to replace him? How do you think that Hassan Reddick and Kareem Martin are going to be able to do to replace him, Johnny?
Well, first, Blake, I want to touch on your point, and it's a good one. Marcus just didn't look like himself for the early portion of this year, for whatever reason it was. You could tell at the beginning of last year, and you heard rumblings about it, he was dominating training camp. He was going to be a player to watch. Even with the acquisition of Chandler Jones, he was making plays left and right, and the sack numbers were there. He led the team in sacks. He was third in the league in sacks with 12 to 13 sacks last year. And not only were the sacks not coming throughout the first, you know, fourth of the season, quarter of the season, but the pressures weren't there either. You know, you didn't see too many quarterback hits. You saw him out of position time after time, not having the opportunity to read the read option, out of position against Dallas multiple times. Teams were taking advantage of that. So you just wonder where his mindset was this season. And it's just so out of character for somebody like Marcus, who outworks the room. And so we wish him nothing but the best in terms of recovery. Just very strange. And so hopefully he's able to bounce back. He's got plenty of time. You look at a guy like Jerron Brown, who's, you know, tore his ACL about around the same time as this last year, and has already come back and contributing at a high level for this team. And so we hope Marcus can do the same. But in terms of this year, I still think the Cardinals will be okay with Chandler Jones. I've already seen from via Dara Urban on azcardinals.com that Hassan Reddick, it looks like, is going to have an opportunity to rush the passer. I think that's smart. With Dansby and now Dayon Buchanan coming back and looking like he's going to be a force at inside linebacker, why not give Hassan Reddick opportunities to rush the passer, specifically on third down? I think that Kareem Martin had an outstanding preseason, and he's fully capable of rushing the passer. I also think he's one of the strongest players on the roster and has tremendous length, and I think he'll be an asset to you specifically on first and second down, and can play the run exceptionally well. So you have guys who you can sub in, sub out. You know, I was posed a question from a friend of mine the other day, interesting one. Do you bring Jarvis Jones back? I know he showed you next to nothing in the preseason, but he has some ability. He obviously knows your system. He was just on the bench the entire offseason. But I would think for now, you're going to be able to get by with Kareem Martin and Hassan Reddick and Chandler Jones. It's a position, thankfully, the Cardinals have now. If there's one thing Keim has done, of all the things that he said he was going to do, he didn't get a quarterback of the future, and he didn't build the offensive line. But thankfully, he built the pass rush depth now from an outside linebacker standpoint that they can sustain one injury to a Marcus Golden. The interior offensive line or defensive line is a different story. But right now, offensive outside linebacker looks to be okay.
Definitely agree there. I think that they've got the depth, and it's interesting considering Reddick played defensive end in college, just to have it be maybe more of a natural position. And I know that the Cardinals compared him to Von Miller coming out as far as his profile, his athleticism. He was just incredible with forcing tackles for loss. So now that Dayon Buchanan's back, perhaps you do end up seeing some more of these packages where you'll be able to get a bit of balance and maybe not completely make up for Golden's loss, but you'll be able to at least see just the team not fall off dramatically just because he's missing. Let's go and talk a little bit about the one other concern, at least, that we've had for this Cardinals team going forward, and that's just going to be kind of trying to find a replacement for Calais Campbell with Kandiji. We've been able to see edge pressure from Chandler Jones. We've been able to see a lot of kind of blitzes that have been able to, with Tyrann Mathieu getting a sack, but we really haven't seen a whole lot of interior pressure. I think the biggest thing with that is when you look at the Cardinals and look at especially Keim's history with first round draft picks, you've only got one of those first four picks, I believe, is still on the roster, and that's Dale Buchanan. You have Jonathan Cooper's off the team, and then you've got Buchanan, and then you've got DJ Humphreys is out injured, and you've got Robert Candice out injured. And that's just one of those tough situations, I think. So one thing at least I do want to also touch on in addition to all of that is just we want to talk a little bit about Bruce Arians, the coach, and just the impact he's had on Arizona. And the fact is that he wasn't actually the first choice for this team in 2013. This is kind of an interesting topic to look for is when you look at how the Chiefs are just having a lot of success with they're leading the league in 6+ yards per carry, while the Cardinals, they can't even average 3 yards per carry on there. If it wasn't for a guy like Andre Ellington, they'd probably have no threat from the running back position whatsoever. Let's talk a little bit about what do you think the team would look like if Andy Reid had for some reason gotten to be the head coach while the team was still in there, Kevin Cobb, Ray Horton, kind of that post Wisenhunt phase. What do you think at least might be some of the outlooks versus if the team had gone with a guy like Arians?
Man, that was so bizarre. If you remember that time frame for those of us who were following the team and Twitter, when the Cardinals had a vacant position opening. I was looking through my notes before our podcast, Blake, and it was the Cardinals were scheduled to have Andy Reid fly to Arizona on January 3rd of 2013, and he canceled his flight, and he ended up rerouting to Kansas City and becoming the head coach of the Chiefs. But the day before, Adam Schefter was quoted on Twitter, and Schefter is right, you know, 99% of the time, ironically enough, said that he had a source tell him that it was 99% certain that Andy Reid was going to be the next coach of the Arizona Cardinals, essentially a done deal. And that all, you know, went up in flames, and the Cardinals were actually, and that was at the start of the free agent period or, you know, the off season for coaches. And then the Cardinals ended up waiting around and were actually the last team to hire a coach, and of course chose Bruce Arians, and it was kind of the under the radar move, and he ended up getting coach of the year that year. So that I think that kind of softened the blow for a lot of Cardinal fans. But well, Andy Reid was a marquee name, and Eagle fans, you know, he was kind of kicked to the curb in the sense that, you know, he had a down year with the likes of Nick Folk and Kevin Cobb, but he'd taken them to 4 straight NFC title games and taken them to a Super Bowl, was an offensive guru. We'd just come off of, you know, offensive ineptness and quarterback, you know, ineptness with Ken Wisenhunt. We had Kevin Cobb in the fold. Could Andy fix Kevin? You know, bring your offensive genius to Arizona. But I'm with you, Blake, in the sense that, you know, we've had some discussions, you know, off air. I think that the Cardinals would have made an effort, even in division, to trade for Alex Smith. I think they would have probably given up draft picks to do so. I think they would have maybe even given up a player to do so. I think that marriage between Andy and Alex is one that makes just too much sense. I'd be interested to see if that didn't happen, whether or not they would have been open to somebody like a Derek Carr, if they would have waited a couple years. Somebody like Carson Palmer just wouldn't have made sense for Andy Reid. So would he have waited another year and just rolled the dice with Kevin Cobb? Then you would have made yourself available for a Derek Carr in the 2014 draft. It's interesting because, you know, I know the AFC West is all the rage now, and I know that they had Peyton Manning a couple years ago, but, you know, I still contend that those early years with Harbaugh and that Niner team and Carroll and that Seahawk team and even the Rams and their defense, the defenses and the physicality of those early NFC West teams that Bruce Arians had to face year in and year out, I think that would have been a problem for Andy Reid. And I know a lot of people would scoff at that notion, but again, the Chargers underachieve year in and year out, and the Raiders just now become relevant, and their defense has never been, you know, even on an average to good level. And they've become viable offensively, and the Broncos are now, you know, they've always been an elite run franchise, but again, the Chiefs and the Broncos have taken it to another level in that division. The Cardinals entered that in that division race, clearly in the bottom tier with Bruce Arians. And he took them to 10 wins that first year. And now our roster was just bottom of the barrel. And what he and Todd Bowles did those first couple of years was unbelievable with Steve Keim. So as much credit and as much love as I give Andy for what they're doing now, I don't think they'd be able to do what Bruce had done. Just my opinion.
Yeah, I totally agree with you there. Part of what you look at with Arians and Keim is how, especially the way that they handled their team and handled quarterbacks, is very, very different from even the majority of NFL teams. You can talk about how three quarterbacks went ahead of them in 2017. You can talk about how they may have looked at Paxton Lynch in 2015. I believe that was actually 2016 draft. But when you start talking about how you view the quarterbacks, it's just so, so different for how Andy Reid treats it. This is a team that went and invested a first and a second round into a quarterback who had all the talent and skills, moving up 17 spots to get him. And that's just something we've not seen Keim and Arians have that willingness to do. They've more tried to go more of either the cheaper or more expensive route with a lot of quarterbacks, which has been very, I guess you could say, odd, considering how you acquire Palmer with a sixth and he ends up being going from a stopgap to, all right, this is your franchise guy for the next few years. And then you kind of had lucked out in that area. But then you talk about with Logan Thomas, and this is like a fourth round draft pick, so it's not really a high investment, and he flames out quickly. And then you look at how the team brings in Blaine Gabbert in this offseason. You just have to wonder, at least based on if the team had gone and actually got Andy Reid, would he have gotten more roster control? Would he have basically had the team move for a quarterback in the draft sooner? Would the team have been able to have some of the success they've had under Steve Keim? The one thing I think that we can all at least agree on is the offensive line and some of the decisions that Keim has made have been very much more of investing heavily into veterans, older players, and then trying to supplement that with draft picks. But we just haven't seen that type of a balance. And what's happened now is that because we don't have the depth and you don't have the coaching, you're starting to see struggles from the offensive line once you start missing one or two starters. So it's just kind of an interesting thing to bring up, kind of maybe a little bit of alternate history. Sometimes it's fun to look back, but for the most part, you just have to kind of wonder if this team under Arians may have kind of played their hand a little bit too long. And that's what we'll see. I mean, Palmer so far looks like he could play through 2018, but you got to wonder with Kurt Warner retiring as soon as he did, if you're going to see more of that here. Let's talk a little bit about just with how a little bit more on the defense here. We've talked a little bit about how the defensive line has maybe not been able to get interior pressure, but we really got to see the secondary shine with multiple pass breakups. They did get a turnover at least and capitalized on that. Talk a little bit about the secondary, and then do you think that this game was a turning point for the Cardinals season, or is this kind of a game where you lose this game and then you lose maybe the Eagles game, and if you drop the Bucs game, you start all of a sudden looking at this team potentially pushing their way out of getting one of these top quarterbacks in the 2018 draft? Talk a little bit about those, about the secondary and that.
Well, I'll start, Blake, with the positives. I think this has a chance to be the best secondary the Cardinals have had since Keim and Arians have taken over the team from a talent standpoint. I think this is the secondary they envisioned having after getting smoked by Cam Newton in Carolina in the playoff game in 2015. From a defensive standpoint, Tyvon Branch is playing the best football of his career. I didn't think he was capable of playing this high of a level. So I'll give him, props for his play this year, because he has raised his game to another level. The biggest thing for him is always staying healthy. So let's hope he can continue to do so. The combination and the depth of Buda Baker and Antoine Bethea has just been huge. Those two playing off of each other and having the availability of both on special teams has been huge. And our coverage teams have been better for it. Tyrann Mathieu had a tremendous game on Sunday and got better as the game went on. Didn't give up a touchdown, had a sack late to help seal the game. And so I think he's only hopefully going to get better. And then, of course, Patrick Peterson, I think, is playing the best football of his career. I believe Pro Football Focus has him rated as their number one overall corner this year. His numbers are just ridiculous. I can't even quote them off the top of my head because they're so ridiculous. And then I can't forget about Justin Bethel. Had an up and down week one. But again, haven't noticed him as much these last couple weeks. Tough game against Dallas. But again, you're going to have that given too many opportunities by our offense, and the pass rush isn't always there. But I think the secondary is the bright spot of the defense, and really the bright spot of the team. So hopefully they continue to play well. But in terms of a turning point for the season, here's what I'll say. It was interesting for me to hear Larry in the post-game press conference say that that game was a must-win when it's week four and the Giants and the Chargers are 0-4. And the Cardinals would drop to, I say only 1-3 with a loss. But they know you cannot lose to the San Francisco 49ers with Brian Hoyer at home. You just can't do it. Even though you'd only fall to 1-3 and the Seahawks are 2-2 and the Rams, who, haven't proven anything, would only, be 3-1 and you haven't played them yet. They know that this team has only so many chances to get back in this race, and they need to win these kind of games. So that tells me that Larry knows we know which games on our schedule we got to have, and this is one of them. Now, next week against Philadelphia, 7-point dog on the road, East Coast time, 12 o'clock start time, or 1 o'clock start time, East Coast. That's a game you probably can afford to lose now that you've won it. Nobody's going to say that, but at the same time, you took care of business. I don't think they're going to win. I said it on Twitter this week. If they win, I think it's the biggest regular season win of Bruce Arians' career in Arizona. And I know it's only week five of the 2017 regular season, but I think that with the way this team's playing right now, with the way that they're being doubted, with the offensive line issues, with the way that Philadelphia is being lauded by the national media, with the defensive line that Philadelphia possesses, with the Marcus Golden injury, just combining all those things, if Arizona were to somehow pull that out, I think that you'd have to put that right up there with the best that Arians has ever done. But in terms of a turning point, I don't know. If they would have blown them out by, two or three touchdowns and looked very impressive doing so, I might say otherwise. But again, they didn't. And they didn't score a touchdown in regulation against the defense that the Rams put up 40-plus points. Now, the hindsight you could say on the other side is that, this is the same team that, put up 30-plus points against the Rams. So how great is the Cardinal defense, or how bad is the Cardinal offense? So I'll leave it up to you to decide that.
Yeah, that was something that I took a look at for some of their upcoming schedule and did get to preview the Eagles game with the Locked On Eagles podcast earlier this week. And they were really, really hoping that the Cardinals' run defense was going to be suspect, because they've had LeGarrette Blount been on a tear for them despite losing Darren Sproles. And that's part of what they try to run, is a balanced offense for Carson Wentz, where he can run the ball, be able to have time in the pocket, to be able to throw downfield, to hit guys like Alshon Jeffery and Torrey Smith. And so far, Carson Wentz has been having a really great year, despite the fact that he's had, from what I remember from PFF, he should have had a lot more passes that either should have been intercepted but were dropped. But I think the game is ultimately going to come down to which is going to be the weakest link on your team. Is it going to be the Philadelphia Eagles secondary against the Cardinals, or is it going to end up being the Arizona Cardinals offensive line? And in a game like this on the road, where it's in a hostile environment, you got to just take the Philadelphia Eagles as being the team who is heavily favored. They have a huge, very strong and firm front seven. And I just don't see the Cardinals being able to buy Carson Palmer enough time for him to be able to hit those receivers against their corners. So I've got the Cardinals losing this week as well. But I will say this, and this has kind of been interesting, is each week I've kind of predicted what the Cardinals are going to do. And so far they've managed to defy pretty much all of my expectations so far. I believe that the first week they're going to eke one out over the Lions. The second week I thought they were going to potentially blow out the Colts, because I still felt that this is a team that was still had talent on offense, and they just really struggled to not just protect Palmer, but to get their offense going, even despite the strong defensive performance. Week three, I felt that they were the more talented team against the Cowboys, and the first half certainly showed that, but they just, again, couldn't finish in the red zone. And it's the same story again against the Niners. So until this Cardinals team, which you can tell they're missing David Johnson, because last year, when you take his 20 touchdowns off of the team, you realize that he basically was kind of that red zone threat where either you could throw the ball because teams had to watch him, or despite the lack of offensive line, he was able to run those touchdowns in anyway. And since then, the injury, you've just really not been able to find a replacement for him. Andre Ellington stepped up, which has been nice, but right now I would probably take the Eagles in this game. Let's move on a little bit to some draft talk, at least, just to kind of close out our night since we previewed the game. What is kind of, if we're going to start talking about the wide receivers, you've got the Cardinals next year are going to be going into John Brown as a free agent. J.J. Nelson's been struggling as far as for being able to hang on to the football. Larry Fitzgerald doesn't even have a contract right now, and for all we know, he may end up calling it a career after this season, whether or not Carson Palmer comes back. And you're going to also look at a guy like Jerron Brown, who has been playing some 99 or so snaps, despite the fact that he came off of an ACL just under a year ago, which is quite impressive. What are some of your thoughts as far as, or should the Cardinals take a look at any of these bigger names in the draft for wide receiver? And who are some of these Bruce Arians types guys you could look at?
Well, receiver is a position that they're definitely going to have to address. Now, my thought process is, I would never take a receiver in the first round unless they are, you know, a franchise changing, you know, prototypical elite wide receiver. And I know that's easy to say, but if, you know, if a Calvin Johnson, a Larry Fitzgerald is staring right at you, a Julio Jones, an AJ Green, where it's obvious, you pull the trigger. But other than that, you know, I'm going to be conservative. And if my team's picking in the, you know, the first half of the first round, there's a reason for it. I'm going to choose to go up front, either offense or on defensive line. But in terms of some of the prospects that I like, you know, I think that this team would be wise to secure John Brown if he's healthy, with or without Larry Fitzgerald. I'm going to assume Larry leaves, and I'm going to assume that Carson and Bruce also leave, and that leaves you JJ and John still in the fold. Both give you the ability to take the top off the defense, but both also show a nice job to be possession receivers. So then who's going to be your big body receiver? One of my favorite wideouts in the country is Cortland Sutton of SMU. He's a junior, but this is actually his fifth year. He played as a true freshman in a couple games. And is off to a fantastic start this year. Last year, he put up over 1,200 yards, had 10 touchdowns, I believe was a second-team All-American. Similar to Corey Davis, doesn't play at the highest level for SMU, but again, is going to put up big numbers this year. I believe he's averaging just under 17 yards a catch. Already he's up to 7 touchdowns this year, and 6'4", about 216, 220, probably he's going to test around 210. So he's got a big physical body, probably he's going to run around 4.5 at the combine. So he's got a presence to him, somebody who's going to be able to go up and get the football. And that's something the Cardinals just don't have right now. Jerron Brown's got that physicality in terms of, you know, he fights for those extra yards, but does he have that, you know, ability to go up and get the football? You know, really, Larry's the only individual on the roster that can do that, and I'm assuming he's going to be gone. We don't know what we have with Williams, the third-round pick this year. Hopefully we get to see more next year or later on this year, but Sutton's one of my favorite players to watch. Unfortunately, he doesn't get to play on national TV all that often, so you have to kind of go look for some of his film. So Blake, do you have anybody who really catches your eye?
Well, I know we've talked a bit about quarterbacks, but I think when you're looking at quarterbacks, you talk about what kind of level of play does a receiver have where he affects the outcome of games, where he can kind of carry his quarterback. We've seen that from Larry. Another guy who's been doing that in college has been Oklahoma State's James Washington. This is a guy who's probably going to end up putting up some great combine numbers. His body size is going to be a little interesting as he seems a little bit more stout than we're used to for a wide receiver, but he's just a true deep threat in the Arians mold. Where you can see with Mason Rudolph, a lot of times there will be underthrown deep passes or just other areas where the wide receiver will bail him out a ton. That's a guy, if you are going to look at going wide receiver early, maybe if you lose Fitzgerald or if you don't feel comfortable bringing John Brown back, that could be a guy you could plug in onto your offense next to J.J. Nelson. Another guy who seems to stand out some, and this would be maybe more of if you're going to talk about the second round, would be a guy like Calvin Ridley. What he really fits with the Cardinals well is that the Cardinals seem to really enjoy drafting older players, whereas instead of getting the 21-year-old guy, that's kind of who they get in the first round. When you start looking at the David Johnsons, the Marcus Goldens, the John Browns, these are all guys who are in their late 23 or even 24. when they came out. John Brown, I know, is especially old, considering that he took an entire year off of college just because of with his entire situation. But that maturity in that level and being able to play at a school like Alabama, which Bruce Arians, of course, was coach at, and we've seen from picks like Logan Thomas and Temple that he really does have a kind of a almost like a spiritual level of connection with some of these players who've been to those schools that he's been through. And it's kind of like how Arizona fans are going to, you know, if you're an ASU fan, you're going to basically be talking about the Cardinals taking Nikhil Harry at some point, regardless of his whatever his draft status ends up being. So I think that when you look at the wide receiver for the Cardinals, it's an area that will need to be addressed. But I think you and I are in agreement that if Bruce Arians is the coach going into next year, and even if he isn't, if you're going to be investing a first round pick in a wide receiver, when you can get a similarly good player in round three and on, there's not really a reason to overspend on a player. We've seen a lot of guys who come in as receivers in the league, like Kevin White and Josh Doctson, who have just been riddled with injuries for whatever reason. The adjustment's been tough for them. So I think I would probably lean toward same area as you. Is there's a couple of names to look at, some guys who might be able to come in and replace. You're probably going to be looking more at offensive line, and if Palmer leaves, maybe you're going to be start talking about quarterback. One more thing, at least, let's kind of do the wrap up. We're kind of been going through talking about the future quarterback, and we're going to be kind of tracking some of these different results as we go throughout the year. So we had a big game from Sam Darnold the other week against Washington State, where it was a duel between him and another highly touted prospect quarterback in Luke Falk. Talk a little bit, at least, about what you've seen so far or haven't seen from Darnold, and what you've seen from Falk, and just a little bit on some of the other quarterbacks you've seen.
Well, you know, Sam's going to be nitpicked, and you knew that coming into this year because of how well he played last year. And, you know, everybody's lasting impression from Sam was, you know, the tremendous outing in the Rose Bowl against Penn State, where he looked like, you know, John Elway reincarnated. And so this year, you know, he's going to have some adversity. We want to see that. That doesn't change my opinion whatsoever. I don't think that he is going through the same kind of struggles that Josh Rosen went through last year, excuse me. And look how well Rosen's playing this year. Blake, I think you sent me some numbers earlier today that Rosen's playing actually better than Darnold is this year. And that's tremendous. It just shows you how strong this class is. So I think Darnold's going to be fine. I think the team is lesser of a team than last year. I think their ranking is just simply based on the fact that Darnold's such a special player. He's got tremendous mobility. He can make all the throws. So, again, I think they're going to end up with a couple losses this year. And, you know, a loss at Washington State against a senior quarterback like Luke Falk is nothing to be ashamed of. On the flip side, you look at Falk, you know, 16 touchdowns to two picks already on the season, a completion percentage of, I believe, 74%, which is fantastic. 66% against USC, just tremendous. He's got the size at 6'4", 225. Again, a senior quarterback from Utah, down-to-earth kid from what I can tell, four-year starter, somebody who fits, you know, the Bruce Arians, Steve Keim mold, somebody who would come into the program and I think would own the position of quarterback, and you could put your arms around and say, okay, young man, take this position and make it your own in this franchise for the next 10 to 15 years. We want to come and we want to have you be the face of our franchise and give you franchise money. Can you handle it? You know, it's the opposite of guys like, you know, Johnny Manziel or RG3 who can't handle it from a maturity standpoint. You look at certain guys can handle it from, you know, a physicality standpoint. A lot of guys could probably leave after their freshman, sophomore year, but from an emotional standpoint, can they handle being the guy? Well, you look at a guy like Luke Falk, and it's probably why somebody like Russell Wilson or, you know, for a lesser extent, Dak Prescott, you know, after his DUI probably grew up a lot. So Sam Darnold's going to have to ask himself, am I, you know, emotionally ready to go to the NFL? You know, I heard Colin Cowherd talk about that on his radio show today. So I wouldn't be surprised if he stayed for another year. We've talked about it, Blake, before. If the Browns had the first overall pick, is he ready to face, you know, that franchise that, you know, has buried some quarterbacks in the past? But I think Luke is an interesting target for a team like Arizona, who figures now have a couple more wins that maybe they wouldn't otherwise have. Team picking maybe in the middle of the first round to have a chance at them. And again, somebody like Mason Rudolph as well. So anybody who jumps out to you?
Well, yeah, well, just to kind of touch on some of those stats that I shared with you, this is just interesting. When you're talking about Bruce Arians, we know that he has a type of quarterback that he likes. You look at how he and the team admitted that they had Blake Bortles as the only franchise quarterback in that 2014 draft and said that they were never going to draft Derek Carr. They passed on Teddy Bridgewater. They passed on Johnny Manziel, despite the fact that I know Steve kind of did like the fire that he had, but they just couldn't agree on a prospect, at least, that wasn't going to be the 6'5", 230 type size, or even like maybe just kind of that idea of looking like a quarterback. You talk about how the teams had interest in all these bigger guys. And I just think that Josh Rosen seems to be the guy who stands out the most so far, even more than a guy like Mason Rudolph, because the offense that he plays in at UCLA has a huge amount of pressure that it puts on him to read the defense, to deliver strong, accurate strikes, especially down the field. And so part of the struggles he's had was taking hits in the pocket. You're looking at it this year, despite the struggles, he's averaging about 57.1 completion percentage on 15-plus yard downfield passes, which that's kind of insane when you think about the difficulty in college football now with vertical offenses, faster pass rushers, and the fact that he's playing in a very pass-happy Pac-12 helps with that. But he's still completing a huge percentage in that intermediate to long range, which is exactly what Bruce Arians wants to run in his offense. He's a guy who's had questions about maybe some maturity and other stuff from scouts, but I think that's kind of the guy where if you're looking at a quarterback who fits that Bruce Arians mold, he's the top guy. Now, if you're going to be, of course, looking at guys who are out after that, then I think that, you know, you can maybe talk about a guy like Falk in a different system, or maybe you do end up kind of looking at a guy in a little bit later rounds. Lamar Jackson's another interesting player because he's a guy who I don't think the Cardinals would draft. Just because of some of the size questions, just some of the different stigma with him. I just feel like he's kind of a guy who they would probably choose to pass on him despite being an electric player if Bruce Arians is their head coach. Now, if he's not, then I think all bets are going to be off for that. Well, I'm going to think that we're just about going to call it a wrap here. For any last comments you want to make before we call it an evening at least? Anything else about the upcoming Eagles game?
I would just say that if the Cardinals have any chance to win this weekend, I think they're going to need, God forbid, a special team score or a defensive touchdown to win the game. That is my prediction. If they somehow pull this off, Carson Wentz is due for a clunker, a bad game. They're going to need a defensive score to do it.
Totally agree with you there. I think that if it comes down to which team is going to protect the quarterback better and which Carson's going to end up winning in the end. Well, thanks again for joining me, John. It's been good. We'll hopefully be able to talk about this next week at least for whether or not the Cardinals win or whether or not we're talking about a two-win team going into a tough game at home against the Bucs. It's going to be an interesting story kind of for the season as we watch. I think this team will maybe not show who they are against the Eagles, unless, God forbid, Carson gets hurt. But I think it's that game against the Bucs we're going to be all eyeing and circling to see if they'll have a shot for everything. All right, you have a good rest of your night. Thank you to all our listeners for tuning in again. We'll see you guys next time.